no matter how conservative you are with the numbers, this was a huge, huge jump in visibility for the gay community here. It certainly drove home the message that organizers wanted, which was that Italy's gay community, and particularly Rome's gay community, is large, it's vibrant, and it's no longer afraid to be public about its existence.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. 37 busted in China's biggest gay raid, Louisiana High Court puts morals in the hands of legislators, and World Pride rocks Rome while the Vatican rags. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Leo Garcia.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 8th, 2000. A national vice enforcement campaign in China began this week with a police raid on a gay health club, resulting in 37 arrests. Police called it the biggest detention sweep against gays yet, although they said most of the men will probably be released. Authorities alleged that the Junji Men's Beauty and Health Center in Guangzhou was selling sex with its staff. The club had only opened in February, but had already signed up hundreds of members. Now it is closed down, and the owner will face criminal charges relating to prostitution. A police spokesperson told foreign reporters that the men at the health club were not arrested because of their sexual orientation, but it seems evident that President Jiang Zemin had gays in mind, among others, when he announced a three-month law enforcement strike against repulsive social phenomena. China does not have a sodomy law per se, but the charge of hooliganism has often been used to close down gay venues, break up gay political organizing, and incarcerate gay individuals.
The U.S. state of Louisiana does have a sodomy law, and this week the state Supreme Court upheld it in a 5-2 ruling. Previously, an appeals court had struck down the law. The century-old statute provides for up to 5 years imprisonment for oral and anal sex, even if they're private, non-commercial acts between consenting adults, even a legally married heterosexual couple. The case before the Louisiana High Court involved a criminal conviction for a heterosexual act. The majority of the justices agreed that since the legislature had declared the acts immoral, they constitute an injury against society itself, and rejected any claim that state privacy rights protected these criminal acts. At the same time, the majority did not believe that any truly private and consensual act would ever come to the attention of authorities. They believed the charge was useful in prosecuting sex offenders in cases where evidence was lacking to support other charges. A dissenting opinion charged that the only apparent purpose of the prohibition is to dictate the type of sex that is acceptable to legislators. While activists were disappointed by the decision, another legal challenge to the Louisiana law is still pending, a 1994 civil lawsuit brought by the group Louisiana Electorate of Gays and Lesbians that was successful in a trial court. The state is appealing that ruling, but no hearing date has yet been set.
In one of the world's more notorious sodomy cases, there's been a surprising twist. Zimbabwe's famously homophobic President Robert Mugabe has granted amnesty to Jephthah Duba, the police constable whose trial for murder first publicly revealed the nation's first post-colonial President Kanan Banana's sexual assaults against other men. Duba shot dead a fellow officer who teased him for being Banana's wife and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. But the court believed Duba was suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome as a result of 3 years of what was described as sexual slavery while he served as an aide-de-camp during Banana's 1980s presidency. The news rocked the nation since Banana had been not only a distinguished international diplomat, but an ordained minister and head of the religion department at the University of Zimbabwe. Duba's trial led directly to an investigation of Banana and his ultimate prosecution and conviction for 11 counts of homosexual assaults against Duba and 8 other victims. Banana lost his last appeal at the end of May, and it was apparently at that point that Mugabe quietly freed Duba after 3 years in prison. That's believed to be Mugabe's only public acknowledgement of the Banana scandal, although the two were colleagues in the ruling ZANU-PF party for more than 30 years. Mugabe is known for years of calling gays worse than pigs and dogs, declaring they have no rights and encouraging vigilante action against them. Zimbabwe's sodomy law does not distinguish between sexual assaults and consensual acts.
Another discriminatory law, the UK's Section 28, was back in the headlines this week in both Britain and Scotland. In Britain, the House of Commons passed a bill including repeal of Section 28, a Thatcher-era statute prohibiting local governments from devoting resources to the promotion of homosexuality or from teaching same-gender relationships as a pretend family relationship. That sets up another battle in the House of Lords, where the repeal clause was defeated by Conservatives in February. But there have been major changes in the makeup of the House of Lords since, and lobbyists from the Stonewall Group say that some repeal opponents seem to be changing their attitudes as well.
In Scotland, a lawsuit charging the city of Glasgow had violated Section 28 with its funding of gay and lesbian and AIDS groups was settled this week. Last month, the Scottish Parliament voted overwhelmingly to repeal the clause. In the settlement, the city admitted no wrongdoing, but agreed to write letters telling the community groups they could not use their city grants to promote homosexuality. As the groups see it, that makes no difference in what they've been doing already. Plaintiff Sheena Strain is believed to be fronting for the Anti-Gay Christian Institute. The court required her to pay the legal costs of the community groups, amounting to some £7,000. Her side is calling the settlement a compromise, but the community groups are declaring it a victory. This may discourage the Christian Institute from its announced plans to bring similar lawsuits against other cities in Britain, where Section 28 remains in effect.
The Episcopal Church USA began its triennial general convention this week amidst protests. Currently, this U.S. arm of the Global Anglican Communion allows each diocese to make its own decisions whether to ordain non-celibate gays and lesbians and whether to bless same-gender couples. This general convention is expected to vote on whether to make that so-called local option official policy, although there is also considerable sentiment against making any firm decision at this time. Gay Reverend Mel White's Soul Force group held a demonstration outside as the meeting opened in Denver, including a carefully planned civil disobedience that resulted in 73 arrests. One of those arrested was Episcopal Bishop Otis Charles, who came out as a gay man after his retirement. A further protest came from an unexpected source, noted singer Judy Collins. An Episcopalian herself, she had been scheduled to headline a concert at the convention to benefit an Episcopal charity. But she announced this week that she will not be appearing, protesting what she views as the church's discriminatory treatment of gays and lesbians. However, Integrity, the network of gay and lesbian Episcopalians, seems much more patient with the church's progress. Led by its president, Reverend Michael Hopkins, and other openly gay and lesbian priests, the group celebrated the Eucharist with 1,200 people in a Denver cathedral.
At least 2 U.S. states appear headed for November votes on ballot measures to deny legal recognition to same-gender marriages. A proposed constitutional amendment in Nevada this week officially qualified for the ballot. In Nebraska, petitions to place a proposed amendment on the ballot were turned in this week with well over the minimum number of signatures required. The Nebraska measure goes beyond marriage to deny legal recognition to civil unions, domestic partnerships, and any other same-sex relationship, a more sweeping measure than any passed in the U.S. to date.
But Germany took a first step towards legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples as the government introduced a bill to establish registered partnerships. That sparked more than an hour of debate in the lower house of parliament, the Bundestag. Conservatives claimed the measure would violate the special status afforded marriage in the national constitution. They were bolstered by both Catholic and Protestant groups who believe the partnerships would damage traditional marriage. Social Democrats and openly gay Green Party MP Volker Beck argued that the partnerships were important to ending discrimination. The bill was sent on to committee. This year's edition of the long-promised legislation includes many of the social and financial benefits of marriage, including residency rights for binational couples, but it does not include adoption rights or certain marital tax breaks.
Homosexuality has often been compared to left-handedness, but now Canadian researchers have found a correlation between them. With a statistical analysis of 20 published studies, they came up with a strong finding that gays and lesbians are more likely to be left-handed than non-gays. Overall, if one out of five non-gays are lefties, then one out of four gays and lesbians are. Gay men are one-third more likely to be left-handed than non-gay men, while lesbians are almost twice as likely to be left-handed as non-gay women. The researchers believe the two traits may have a common cause in what's called developmental instability, prenatal factors including exposure to sex hormones, although they don't claim that this is the sole cause of all homosexual orientation. However, the correlation can only be seen in large groups, and the researchers emphasize that left-handedness would not be a useful clue for deciding if someone was gay or straight. Also announced this week was a British study of transsexuals, who were also found to include a disproportionate number of left-handers.
And finally, left-handedness may not tell you who's gay, but that sense that you have about who is has won a measure of official recognition. It's right there in black and white in the new edition of the Random House Webster's new college dictionary, Gaydar, defined as a homosexual's ability to spot another.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 8th, 2000, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Leo Garcia.
Tens of thousands of lesbian, gay, and trans people and their allies marched through the streets of Rome on July 8th at the climax of the week-long World Pride Roma 2000 celebration. There were international conferences, parties, and a wide range of related events, and there were also protest demonstrations by neo-fascists and Catholic groups opposed to the high-visibility queer occasion. Reporter Matt Alsdorf covered the festivities for the internet service Planet Out and spoke with This Way Out from Rome the day after the Pride March.
I think one of the things that really struck me was how similar it was visually to any other gay pride march. It was led off by a leather-clad biking contingent, and it was followed by, you know, your typical cadre of drag queens and left-leaning politicians and supportive parent groups and religious organizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think the only major difference was the signs were in Italian. Otherwise, it really was a very similar march to what you might see in the States or elsewhere in Europe. It was certainly the centerpiece event. There were, of course, a whole bunch of parties last night that went all the way until 7 a.m. this morning, and then there's a big beach party this evening. But it was definitely the centerpiece of the entire week and the event that had sparked the most controversy and gotten the most media attention. I think people were a little bit tense leading up to it, just wanting to make sure that it came off without a hitch, and in most respects it did. So people are very relieved and are out partying. Just in general terms, I think that everyone was very happy with how the march came off for a couple reasons. I think first, because it happened entirely peacefully leading up to the march, there had been a number of counter-protests from both neo-fascist groups and from Catholic groups throughout the week and even prior to that. And there had been threats by at least one neo-fascist group to actually physically block the progress of the march. So organizers and participants were a little jittery about that and feared, you know, worst-case scenario, that it could even erupt into violence. Everything went off without a hitch, really. And I think the second reason that people are very happy is that the attendance was quite high. As with you know, any big event, the specific numbers are hard to come by. The police say something like 70,000 people marched. Organizers think it was closer to 700,000. But last year, Rome's Gay Pride event had about 10,000 participants. So no matter how conservative you are with the numbers, this was a huge, huge jump in visibility for the gay community here. It certainly drove home the message that organizers wanted, which was that, you know, Italy's gay community, and particularly Rome's gay community, is large, it's vibrant, and it's no longer afraid to be public about its existence.
Previous international pride celebrations in cities around Europe have been well supported, but the controversy surrounding World Pride Roma 2000 magnified its significance to activists from many countries. The Vatican strongly objected to it being held during this Jubilee year observance of the 2000th birthday of Christ, even though the Lesbigay event was set long before the church's plans were announced. However, Catholic opposition became a special invitation for Pride participants.
I think the international participation certainly was significant. Again, it's hard to get firm figures on that, but the biggest contingents were people from elsewhere in Italy, elsewhere in Europe. There were also a lot of people from North America. Most of the people from North America who I spoke to had planned on being in Europe for other reasons. You know, they were coming for a summer trip of some sort, but felt that it was important to come down to Italy and participate in Pride when they found out this was going on. Then there were also people who made a trip especially over to Italy just for this event. And one of the interesting things that a lot of those people cited was that the reason they came over was because of the controversy with the Catholic Church. They may have been Catholic themselves or had grown up Catholic and no longer were, but they felt that it was very, very important for them to show their support of Italy's gay community. So I think that the Vatican's really vocal opposition to the march and to Italy's gay community may have backfired. And I think that's the consensus view among a lot of people here. It really brought a lot more attention to this march and to this event than it would have had without their opposition. It brought a lot of press coverage in Italy to gay rights issues, which is something they have not covered very much in the past at all, and it started a dialogue in a wider forum than it would have otherwise had. The Vatican has, you know, for a long time believed that homosexual sex is a sin, and they have spent a lot of media time in the last few months explaining the, you know, scriptural basis for that and how they interpret those teachings. They also, early in the week, told a bishop who was going to participate in a conference related to World Pride on homosexuality and religion that he could not participate. They essentially issued a gag order. And this has really started a dialogue within the walls of the Vatican and within the confines of the Catholic Church about what the position on homosexuality should be. There is a small, I would say very small, but very vocal minority of bishops and Catholic priests who are supportive of the gay community. In fact, there was one priest from Italy who spoke yesterday at the post-march rally and told those gathered there that that while the hierarchy of the Catholic Church may not be on their side, the local priests were, and that this was really their church as well, and that even though it might take a long time for it to change, it eventually would.
Reporter Matt Alsdorf told This Way Out that there were genuine fears of violent disruption during World Pride Roma 2000.
Last Saturday, which was the official opening ceremony for World Pride, also saw, I believe the most commonly cited number was a 700-person neo-fascist march through the streets of Rome against World Pride. And at the opening ceremony, I think people were fairly nervous about what would happen. Security was pretty tight. It was the first time that the police really came out in a show of force to protect the Gay Pride events. However, I must add that people who were at the opening ceremonies did not see the neo-fascist march, which happened in an entirely different part of the city. And that was true of most of the counter-demonstrations throughout the week. There were a handful of them, and with the exception of only one, they really happened in parts of the city where, unless you just happened to be there, you would not stumble across them if you were there for World Pride. The one protest that did happen in a World Pride area was on Monday. There was a conference at the Hotel Cicerone, which is very near the Vatican, on homosexuality and religion. And a group of a few dozen neo-fascist protesters showed up early in the morning across the street from the hotel and demonstrated against the conference. But the police presence there was extremely, extremely strong. The police, by all accounts, outnumbered the protesters, and the protest was dispersed pretty quickly, and in fact before most of the journalists and most of the participants in the conference even got there. But I think that it did set people on edge a little bit. Showing up at that hotel and seeing police barricades out, and tons of paddy wagons and police cars and lines of police and bomb squads, you know, it's hard to enter a scene like that without feeling a little bit nervous. But as the week went on, I think that dissipated quite a bit. The police presence, as I'd mentioned before, was absolutely fantastic. They were everywhere that Gay Pride was. They guarded the parade route, the hotels, the discos. Even the most famous gay cruising and sex park in Rome was guarded 24 hours a day by at least two police vans with multiple policemen inside. One of the things that the organizers continually expressed their gratitude for was the police presence. The reason being that the city of Rome, a few weeks before the event, decided to officially withdraw its funding and sponsorship of World Pride. The official reasons given weren't we bowed to the Vatican, but by all accounts, the Vatican's pressure played the major role. So the organizers could no longer use the city logo, and the funds that the city had allocated to support World Pride, they said, were going to be reallocated for infrastructure and security for the event. And I think everyone was a little skeptical about what that meant, you know, whether the city was essentially just withdrawing funding altogether. But because the police were out in such force and showed up places they weren't even requested to be, I think that the organizers were happy to see that that redirection of funds was actually playing out to their benefit.
A broad range of events led up to the July 8th World Pride March through the streets of Rome.
The week kicked off with the opening ceremonies and then went right into a bunch of conferences during the day. Now, I must say that Rome has a very, very active nightlife, and most people who had come to World Pride for more of the social aspect didn't do many things during the day. It was beastly hot here throughout the week, 95, 96, 97 degrees, and very, very humid. So most of the social events and more press-oriented events happened in the evening. But the substantive events, such as the conferences, happened during the day, and there were a couple that I think were fairly significant. The first, which I mentioned earlier, was the Religion and Homosexuality Conference, which was a one-day conference that happened on Monday. It brought together people with a whole variety of different views on religion. There was certainly a lot of anger and frustration expressed at the Vatican, but also a strong contingent of people who felt that religion and religion in general, and Christianity specifically, could be consistent with being gay, and people who were really working to find a way to reconcile those two identities, queer and religious or spiritual. The second major conference of the week was ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, which brought together gay activists and gay groups from around the world to talk about their shared priorities and develop a shared agenda for the coming year. And one of the most important dialogues that happened there, by a lot of accounts, was called the South-South Dialogue, a set of meetings that brought together countries from the Southern Hemisphere, mostly developing nations, to talk about the different challenges that they faced from the European and North American countries that tend to dominate the publicity and the dialogue at these sorts of events. In terms of the other events, there were a lot that happened in the evenings, and I think that will stick in the minds of people for probably even longer than the conferences. Those were yesterday's parade, certainly. Also, there was a fashion show on Tuesday night in Circo Maximo, which is a former chariot racing track, and now it's a grassy field where it's been the headquarters of World Pride for this week. Probably the most talked about garment of the evening was a hoop skirt that was shaped like the Colosseum, which debuted to a huge round of applause there. But it was the first major, well-attended, outdoor, public gay event of the week, and it was held in a fairly populated part of Rome, so a lot of people were driving by or strolling by in the evening, people who wouldn't necessarily have known about World Pride and saw this happening and stopped to look and find out what was going on. There was also a Pride Park area, which was the center of a lot of activity throughout the week, a fairly informal set of booths, craftsmen, etc. And it just functioned as a central meeting place for most of the World Pride events, and it was just a buzz of activity starting at 9 or 10 p.m. every night with people strolling around. When it would shut down at 3 in the morning, there would still be throngs and throngs of people standing around chatting.
As the dust settled on World Pride Roma 2000, July 9th, we asked reporter Matt Alsdorf what kind of impact he thinks the week will have on Italian society and politics.
I think today, it's only been one day since the march, there's a sense of euphoria about it having happened and about it having happened successfully. But even through that euphoria, I think that there is a certain sense of questioning that the Italian and Roman gay communities are doing right now about how much of a lasting impact this will have. It was clearly crucial that it got a dialogue started in Italy that has never really happened before on this sort of a scale, and that will have lasting impact for gay and lesbian people here. The Vatican is not going to turn on its heels and do a 180-degree turn in how it deals with homosexuality. And in fact, the Pope came out today again and reiterated his opposition to the gay rights march, to same-sex marriage. To everything, basically, this march and this event had hoped to accomplish. So there's really no sign of relenting on the Vatican side. Similarly, in Italy, I mean, this is a country without employment discrimination protection. You can be fired. And in fact, in some places, there is an outright ban on gay teachers. You cannot donate organs if you are queer. There's a lot of residual homophobia. And again, this has started a discussion specifically about those laws and those lack of protections. The people I've talked to here about the state of Italian politics say by far the largest voting bloc in Italy is a sort of centrist Catholic voting bloc, and this bloc is not going to change its beliefs on homosexuality and how to deal with it very quickly, particularly when the church remains vocally opposed to it. So the process here in Italy of changing specific laws is going to be a long one as well. One of the things that I was struck by yesterday was the number of heterosexual people who had come out to show their support for the gay rights march. A lot of people here had expected that this would be a very predominantly gay lesbian event. It would not be one that drew such widespread political support from straight politicians and also from families. There were many, many straight couples who had come out with their children who lived in Rome because they really wanted their kids to get exposure to gay people in a way that they really don't have any other opportunity to do in Italian society. I think the attendance of a lot of these people was provoked by the discussion that was brought on because of the Catholic Church, and they felt that because it was such a divisive issue, they had to pick a side, and the side they wanted to choose was to support the Pride event.
That was Matt Alsdorf reporting from Rome and World Pride 2000. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Leo Garcia, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Brian Nunes, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Martin Rice, and Matt Alsdorf contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Gill Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and by Planet Out. From designated contributions from Uncommon Clout Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com, visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letter of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. For Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on KBOO Portland, Oregon, WEFT Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, KNON Dallas, Texas, and more than 100 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned.